Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette, dated Sunday, August 16th, 2020. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Back to School, Hard to Watch, Child Care Facilities Scramble to Accommodate Remote Learners, by Anthony Zillis. Jeff Scott watched from a distance as schools closed their doors in March, knowing how difficult the ensuing months would be for administrators, staff, and students. 2 years removed from his time as principal of Carrie Busey Elementary School, the president and CEO of the Stevens Family YMCA knew his new organization would play a role in students' education. He just didn't know exactly what that role would be. As a former principal, I thought, geez, what are these kids going to do? Where are they going to go, and how are we going to help? Scott said. As things started to play out, and more remote learning options came about, it was like, oh, maybe we need to have a fairly large response to this. Through the spring and summer, the YMCA has hosted 50 to 60 children. But as the fall draws closer and plans have changed for school districts across the area, Scott and his organization are planning something bigger. The local YMCA hopes to open at least 5 sites in Champaign-Urbana and a few others throughout Champaign County to host at least 200 K-5 students as they participate in remote learning. The students will be in classrooms with no more than 10 children and 2 adults. We'll set up 6 mini-schools, if you will, Scott said. Obviously, we won't have the same level of education as a school would, and, you know, 10 kids per room is going to make it easy for us to keep them distanced and safe. But we're going to provide places where we can keep the numbers way down, and we can keep them spaced out. Those plans began before announcements over the last 2 weeks that the Champaign and Urbana school districts would spend the first quarter fully remote. That leaves over 15,000 kids without a school to go to. With plans finally in place for the area's largest 2 districts, local nonprofits and daycares have scrambled to put together spaces for those children to go to. I think what the community is recognizing is that our job is to teach in whatever form that is, Champaign Superintendent Susan Zola said. That's why so many community partners are stepping in, because they want to help with the child care needs of our families, and so that's why you see several of them at the table. Don Moyer, Boys and Girls Club Executive Director Sam Banks, didn't realize that this summer's program would be a test run for fall, but that's exactly what the organization's socially distanced programming has amounted to. This fall, the club will host about 100 kids, Banks said, with no more than 13 in a room. It will also have 2 sites in Rantoul to host kids. The summer program was a good opportunity to have a test run, he said. We're hearing from parents who are looking forward to the Boys and Girls Club being a site where their kids can come. They know they'll have support with navigating online learning, being there when issues come up, with an adult there who can coach them through the online learning process. With support from the United Way, the club won't charge more than its normal $20 membership fee. Banks thinks programs like the one at his club, which will last from morning until evening, are important beyond simple support for online learning. While Zola said much of her district's curriculum will focus on social and emotional needs, learning over a computer is different from in-person interaction. They know that their kids, from an emotional social development standpoint, are missing out on things, Banks said. They're seeing their kids sitting around the house, not engaged in any positive social activities. they're not able to get with their friends to uplift their spirits. They're seeing some of the ramifications of that with the attitudes and the kind of situations where kids are becoming more agitated because they're just not able to get out. Daycare facilities that typically host kids who are not yet in school are creating new programming to accommodate families with students. At La Petite Academy, students from Champaign, Urbana, and Mahomet will bring their computers and headphones and log in to learn from their own individual classrooms. While students will be able to do some of their work independently, much of it will be live with a teacher. My Morning Out, a morning drop-in daycare service, will provide a classroom for up to 15 students to participate in remote learning for half of day and may add another if there's enough demand. We've heard a lot of, "Oh, this is great, but we're going to see what our school district does and get back to you," Assistant Director Carrie Bushman said. "It's so stressful because it's so soon. It's going to be interesting. But I think that's what this school year is going to be like all around." Originally, Katie Peterson and Ellen Sadoff, former Champaign District teachers and now owners of Sprouts Art and Nature School, planned on hosting students who would be participating in the district's virtual academy, a separate school for students who chose to learn remotely. But plans evolved. Now that all students will be attending school virtually, they'll each attend their own classroom as if they were there in person. That means every K through 3 student will learn on a different schedule. We decided that we needed everyone to use the sabbatical forms to opt out of the school district for a year, and we'll do our own stuff, Peterson said. Their plan for Sprouts is to keep students outside the entire day. That includes in the winter, when they'll set up an area with heat lamps to keep the kids warm. We think playing is really important, and we definitely think that academics are going to be below emotional well-being and health, Peterson said. It's going to be a toss-up year for everybody, I think. With only a week left before they are supposed to drop off their kids at school, many parents are simply grappling with the idea of finding paid care for their school-aged children. "Our current families are very relieved that we have this option available for them," Parker said. "I've spoken to quite a few new parents who have called looking for care, and they're obviously hesitant." You have those parents whose children have just graduated from preschool and are looking forward to that first opportunity to avoid paying for childcare. Now, all of a sudden, they're like, "Hold on, my child's going to school and I need full-day childcare, and what does that mean?" At Urbana's Neighborhood Connection Center, clear shower curtains are being used as dividers between desks with computers. In the gym at Urbana Middle School, desks will be set up with social distancing in mind, ready for kids to come in and attend remote school. Kids will disperse across Urbana Park District buildings as well. The Boys and Girls Club will hold an extended day program as well, Banks said. iPower School of Gymnastics and the Champaign Gymnastics Academy are also providing camp-like programs. As for the YMCA, a majority of its 200 spots remain open, and Scott thinks that may be because of the cost, $220 a week for non-members and $190 per week for members. Families receiving child care assistance program funding and scholarships from the YMCA can get that down to around $30 per week, he said. Scott also said the organization is working on procuring additional funding to lower that price, which he said is at cost for the organization. Of course, challenges await any organization caring for small children tasked with keeping masks on their faces and 6 feet distance between each other. But throughout the spring and summer, when the YMCA has hosted a smaller scale day program for kids, Scott has seen it work relatively smoothly. One day, in early August, school-aged kids clustered together, some sitting around desks and others on their feet playing games, both outside and inside. Some of the kids, of course, needed reminders about keeping their mask on or pulling it above their nose after it slid down. But the days go off without much trouble, Scott said. The kids wear masks pretty well, he said. Sometimes they slip below their nose and we have to tell them to pull them back up, things like that. But we've had kids in masks the whole time. Scott said the days for the kids will mix in remote learning with a camp feel. That means his agency will provide fun, games, and outdoor time to go with the daily hours spent looking at a computer screen. For Scott, the summer program is evidence that this type of learning experience is possible during the pandemic, even if it's quite a bit different from normal school. We want kids to enjoy it, Scott said. We'll continue to do our very, very best to make sure they know they're safe, but give them a place to go and make it a meaningful experience. Continuing on the front page, I have an article titled Reminders That Humans Are Only Human. It's an opinion by Tom Kasich. It probably seemed like a good idea at the time. After all, it was an era when it seemed there was nothing that humans couldn't do, nothing that couldn't be tamed or overcome. Eliminate polio? Check. Send a human into outer space? Yep. End a world war with one bomb? Check. Control a frequently flooded river and create recreational and economic development opportunities at the same time? Can do. So when it came time in May 1963 to begin construction of the 12,000-acre Lake Shelbyville in central Illinois, it called for more than a run-of-the-mill ribbon cutting. This had to be much bigger. The Army demolition team that planned to blow up tons of dirt and rock and timber wanted to simulate a nuclear explosion, complete with a mushroom cloud rising over rural Shelby County, about 70 miles southwest of Champaign-Urbana. Strong winds prevented the explosion smoke from making a hoped-for mushroom cloud, but the ending was anticlimactic to a day Governor Otto Kerner said is history in the making, the Decatur Herald reported. The day that created Lake Shelbyville, about 70 miles southwest of CU, was finished 50 years ago. Indeed, that blast on May 4, 1963, was the culmination of an effort that had begun in 1938, later interrupted by World War II, to persuade the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to do some of the flood control and dam building it had been doing in the South for decades. I have been close to this project for 5 years, and I can't imagine what it will be like 10 years from now, an enthusiastic Shelbyville mayor, William LaCrone, told the Chicago Tribune in 1966. By 1970, humans had tamed part of the 325-mile-long Kaskaskia River, built a large, impressive dam at the east entrance to Shelbyville, and sowed hopes for more population, more economic development, and more recreational opportunities. We have in the past attempted to bring industry to rural Illinois, and frankly, we have not succeeded, U.S. Representative George Shipley, Democrat only, said at the time. This area now has what it needs to attract industry, water, and waste disposal. Another Illinois governor, Richard Ogilvie, said at dedication ceremonies in September 1970 that the lake represented the will of free man, freely hired and freely committed to build without destroying. Man has always been a creator and a destroyer, Ogilvie claimed. Lake Shelbyville represents a victory for man, the builder. There had been plans this year to celebrate the 50th anniversary of man's triumph over the wild Kaskaskia with festivities at and around Lake Shelbyville. But COVID-19, an unassailable reminder that there are still things that humans can't immediately overpower, spiked that. For now, the only celebration is a fireworks display, originally. Tom Kasich, the News Gazette, planned for the 4th of July. That will be fired off September 12th, said Freddie Fry, director of the Shelby County Office of Tourism. Meanwhile, Lake Shelbyville today offers, just as Kerner said in 1963, staggering recreational facilities, including fishing, boating, swimming, camping, and hiking, as well as a golf course and other lodging options. But some of those other visions of 60 or so years ago have yet to materialize. The hoped-for industrial development hasn't occurred. The population of Shelbyville, which officials expected to swell from 4,800 in 1967 to 6,800 or more within 15 years, has dropped to 4,495, according to 2019 estimates. And the state-supported Eagle Creek Resort, which opened on Lake Shelbyville in 1989 with grand visions, was burned to the ground last year. It was ordered closed after a mold infestation in 2009 and never reopened. Still, an estimated 4 million tourists visit the lake in a typical year. And even in this atypical year, Fry said, the campgrounds are full and motels and lodges have been busy since coronavirus-related restrictions were lifted in June. The traffic on our website picked up so much that we exceeded our bandwidth and crashed, she said. It was crazy, but we were thrilled because that meant that people were ready to get out again. And just think what might happen when humans tame the coronavirus. Tom Kasich's column appears on Sundays, and he can be reached at kasich@newsgazette.com. The next article on the front page is titled, He Set an Example for Public Service. Technically, Big Jim Thompson didn't attend the University of Illinois Urbana campus, but the state's longest-serving governor, who died Friday at age 84, put in at least a semester's worth of time here during his 14 years running the land of Lincoln. I attended the University of Illinois at Navy Pier, Harvard on the Rocks, but my favorite campus spots were Memorial Stadium and the Assembly Hall, he told the News Gazette in 2017 for our U of I at 150 and Beyond project. I signed the 21-year-old drinking bill on the field at the stadium. Very unpopular reception. But, along with Willie Nelson, I brought the first farm aid to the stadium. I would fly from Springfield to the Assembly Hall, don the war paint, and cheer on the Illini as governor. Used to get complaints from other Midwestern governors whose students wanted to know why they didn't wear their school colors. Tributes poured in Saturday from Illinois governors past. Jim Thompson stood for cleaning up corruption in Illinois politics and government, said Pat Quinn. And present, he set an example for public service of which Illinoisans could be proud, said J.B. Pritzker, by Jeff D'Alessio. Continuing with an article titled, Four-Term Governor Dies at 84, by Rick Pearson and Rosemary Sobel, Chicago Tribune. As Illinois' longest-serving governor, Big Jim Thompson was a larger-than-life figure in state history, his 6'6" frame dominating the political landscape for 14 years as he guided the state through recession, became a builder, and left a legacy that includes restoring Navy Pier, keeping the White Sox with a new stadium, and opening a controversial downtown office building that bears his name. James Robert Thompson, who rode his success as a federal prosecutor to the Illinois State House and was governor from 1977 to 1991, died Friday night after suffering from heart problems. He was 84. It was very sudden, said wife Jane, her voice breaking. I was told that his heart simply stopped. Thompson was a Republican moderate from Chicago. His interest in the city helping him to be able to work with Democrats, though he had prosecuted many of them, including former Governor Otto Kerner, over a scandal involving horse racetrack stock. Viewed as a political outsider with no allegiances, Thompson announced his candidacy for governor after leaving the U.S. Attorney's post in 1975. In his first bid for office, He won the GOP primary. The next year, with 87% of the vote, and then took on then-Secretary of State Michael Hallett in the general election. Hallett had defeated one-term Governor Dan Walker in the Democratic primary, and the divided party proved no match for newcomer Thompson, who got 65% of the vote. 2 years later, Thompson won re-election against then-Comptroller Michael Bacalus and twice defeated former U.S. Senator Adlai Stevenson III in 1982 and 1986. The 1982 contest was the closest gubernatorial race in Illinois history, ultimately decided in Thompson's favor by 5,074 votes, following a state Supreme Court ruling. In 1986, the Democratic ticket was infiltrated by followers of extremist Linda LaRouche, and Stevenson launched a third-party bid that failed. "I never thought I'd last this long," Thompson confessed in 1989, as he announced his decision not to seek a fifth term. He recalled that after making a bad first impression on a Central Illinois newspaper editor during his first campaign, "He told me that I was as green as goose," expletive, "and I was." Thompson was far from a button-downed, lawyerly bureaucrat and knew the value of populist appeal. He opened the annual state fair clad in jeans with a ride down the giant slide. He made a spur-of-the-moment decision to ride a horse around the Capitol Rotunda. He was a staple of the holiday parade circuit. And when Republicans in the Illinois House sought passage of a bill to make Illinois a right-to-work state where union membership was not a mandatory job requirement, Thompson called local beer distributors in Springfield, had them set up shop on the lawn of the governor's mansion, and invited protesting labor members to have a drink. The bill never passed. "I never dreamed it would be 14 years. It's never been my style to begin with," Thompson said. "I'd like to build things and then never stay around to run them." It is as a builder that will serve as Thompson's legacy. Even as the state looks to sell what was once an opulent building but is now considered a white elephant known as the James R. Thompson Center, designed by architect Helmut Jahn, it opened in 1985, at a cost of $172 million. Lawmakers named it after him in 1993. One of Thompson's more dramatic political moments came in summer 1988. The Sox were threatening to move to Florida and wanted a new stadium. Thompson worked the House floor, granting legislators' wishes in exchange for their votes. One Republican said he was granted an endorsement for Secretary of State, a race that never came to pass. Facing a midnight deadline to pass the stadium bill with 60 votes, it would take 71 after the deadline, lawmakers kept roll call open even though midnight had passed. The bill was declared passed with 60 votes, and a staff member used whiteout over the 12:03 a.m. timestamp and wrote 11:59 p.m. in pen. "You bet I was worried," Thompson told reporters moments after he left the House floor after doing some arm twisting on his party's side of the aisle. "I didn't know it would pass. Now we should build a stadium." The Sox deal proved controversial because it called for the state to spend at least $150 million to build a new Comiskey Park, plus improvements, as well as giving the team a multi-million dollar break by allowing it to forego rent unless the team drew more than 1.2 million fans a year. In other local news, an article titled "Champagne Man Accused of Having and Sharing Child Porn" by Mary Shank, Urbana. A Champagne man who allegedly downloaded and shared pictures of children being sexually assaulted has been charged with trafficking in and possessing child pornography. Matthew McDuffie, 36, who listed an address in the 1500 block of Holly Hill Drive, was arrested Wednesday and made his first appearance in federal court Thursday. An affidavit filed in U.S. District Court said the investigation started Wednesday when a person close to McDuffie reported to Champaign police the presence of child pornography on an old cell phone belonging to him. Police took that phone and another, then obtained search warrants for them from a Champaign County judge. Tech Crimes Unit Officer David Monahan said he discovered multiple photos of children, possibly as young as 2 and up to age 8, being sexually assaulted by an adult male. The affidavit said McDuffie admitted being addicted to pornography in general and having a problem with child porn. He told Monahan he had viewed it since about age 12 on multiple mobile devices using the internet. The charges filed against him allege that he did so between September 25, 2019 and Wednesday. He's being held in the Macon County Jail. In another article titled Probation for Theft of Employee's Wallet, also by Mary Shank, Urbana, a Champaign 17-year-old charged with stealing wallets belonging to employees at Champaign businesses has been sentenced to 8 months of probation. The youth was also ordered to perform 25 hours of public service after pleading guilty Thursday before Judge Tom DeFantis to burglary. He admitted he went in Sailfin Pet Shop at 720 South Neal Street in Champaign in February, intending to steal a wallet from a purse in the employee office. The activity was captured on video. State's attorney, Julia Reitz, dismissed 4 other counts alleging similar conduct at 3 other Champaign businesses where the teen went in employee-only areas. The teen was charged in early March in connection with thefts that happened January 13th at JCPenney, February 6th at Sailfin, February 15th at Target, and February 17th at Planet Fitness. And on this day in history, in 1920, the Urbana Association of Commerce adopted a resolution recommending that the city councils of Champaign and Urbana ban street carnivals. Much of the carnival in Champaign the previous week was about gambling and other degrading attractions, said Dr. R.E. Hieronymus, community advisor to the University of Illinois. The only legitimate attractions were the Ferris wheel, the merry-go-round, and the whip, he said. Experience showed that numerous girls were led into lives of shame as a result of the visit of the carnival, he said, while a slimy trail of syphilis and gonorrhea followed in its wake. In 1970, with the last chapter of the 1970 Illinois Constitutional Convention almost written, convention members were planning how to start selling their plan. In 2005, the NCAA's action earlier that month against schools with hostile or abusive American Indian imagery was a giant step backward in the debate over use of such imagery, said University of Illinois Board of Trustees Chairman Lawrence Epley. He said he was disappointed by the organization's use of the terms hostile and abusive. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for Sunday, August 16th, 2020. Please stay tuned.